Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:17 PM, and that is Pacific Summer Time, and today is July 25th. I thought I would kick off today with the NASDAQ future. 5 minutes ago, it was down 100 points. It's down 46 points now. There has been two big earnings announcements. One was Amazon, the other was Google. Amazon disappointed. Its earnings were approximately $1 billion below what the street was expecting, but their guidance for the third quarter is pretty much in line. Well, that does suggest that we are going to get at least some consolidation in the region of the $2,000 area in Amazon. Now, when we look at the NASDAQ's trend, that was certainly a very large pullback that we saw at the end of last year. And an equally and perhaps even more impressive rebound from the lows. The upside key reversal from the region of the trend mean approximately 2 months ago was about as clear a signal as anyone might wish for, that demand is returning in the region of the trend mean and we have a clear higher reaction low. Now we're right in the region of the all-time peak, which is just about above the peak that we saw back in early May. We can see also that there is a short-term overbought condition. So I think it is, quite likely we're going to get at least some consolidation here. But the other point, of course, is that we're at a new all-time high. And the quantity of cash that's sitting on the sidelines is rather large. That was something that was really rather apparent in terms of the portfolios that I have access to and look at in terms of the actions of institutional and family office investors. There's a lot of people have got a lot of cash sitting on the sidelines, regardless of the fact that we're at a new all-time high and we've had this very impressive rebound. Well, that suggests that there is ample additional liquidity that could potentially come in to fuel this advance. The other big point, of course, is that you don't get major market tops when everybody's already in cash. And that's, I think, the most important point, that when you get a range, you certainly get the arguments that are both for and against the bullish hypothesis coming back into equilibrium. So people do start to get antsy, they start to get unsure, and not least because ranges are boring relative to the trending phases, and then you also have the condition that people are looking for confirming evidence to persist in their long positions, and it doesn't become readily apparent for until you at least get a break on the upside. Well, despite the short-term risk of some consolidation on the NASDAQ, I think when we look at the outlook for Amazon, well, it is right in the region of its all-time peak. It was above $2,000 yesterday, and it's slightly below it in here today. There's equally a short-term overbought condition here, but it has held the sequence of higher reaction lows off the bottom at the end of last year, and I think it is due a little consolidation and it's probably getting it right now. Google also reported its earnings just after the close, and this is also, I think, a rather important share. It is now rebounding from the psychological $1,000 area. That's enormously important because this is a larger reaction. We've seen the pullbacks coming back into the underlying range, and then the big question is whether the sequence of higher or equal reaction lows will hold. Well, $1,000 is about where it is, so it really does need to hold that level. Then last night we had Facebook come through with better than expected earnings, but the increased regulatory scrutiny did weigh on the share in here today, and as it pauses around the psychological $200 area. The thing is, of course, that everybody knows what happened the last time it traded above this level. We had a very sharp pullback. Well, I think that suggests that we're probably going to get some consolidation here, but the most important thing it's done has been to bounce here, and in a very emphatic fashion, from the region of the trend mean back in late May, and or I think perhaps more accurately early June. Well, if all we get is some consolidation, I think that is rather encouraging. What we did see yesterday, though, was that Tesla disappointed in terms of its profit outlook, although it is selling more cars. It was down by $36 in here today and gapping lower. Well, now the big question is, considering the size of this downside Q reversal, the big question is whether we're going to get follow through on the downside or whether we're going to get a higher reaction low. If this is confirmation of resistance in the region of the trend mean and the lower side of the overhead trading range, well, then there is, I think, the a clear potential that we're going to see additional downside and that it may start to trend further lower. This is obviously a very big question. One of the reasons that Tesla has been able to prosper and reach the size that it has been because of its monopoly, really, of the carbon credits in California. But that has now ended. And then, of course, it's going to have a lot more competition coming through in the next year. Well, that also represents a challenge. It's going to have to start to deliver on some of its promises. Well, it's obviously in investing again in more battery factories. Well, we know what happened the last time it did that. It ranged, and it ranged for approximately 3 years until that investment process had ended. But we're now at a point where some of the willingness of investors to continue to fund loss-making companies is beginning to dry up. And I think that's also starting to factor into the kind of move that we've had in Netflix with this rather abrupt pullback over the course of this week. Now, the share was in positive territory in here today. So it is unwinding at least some of the short-term oversold condition. But these sorts of stabs on the downside where we're getting really quite acute pullbacks for what are effectively highly speculative enterprises, that is representative of sentiment changing. One of the leading decliners in the market today was Align Technology, and these Invisalign braces, they don't look as bad as the normal track braces, but they're not nearly as effective. That's certainly the feedback I've had from dentists that I know, that the vast majority of dental braces are done for cosmetic reasons, not specifically because they are required, but that Align doesn't really do the job. And that is now looking increasingly likely that people are starting to wake up to that, and that sales are slowing. These kinds of stabs on the downside following incredible accelerations on the upside do rather raise the potential that the entire advance may be completely unwound. So there is some evidence of the values in highly speculative enterprises that are starting to get unwound. What I also found particularly interesting was this graphic from the housing market yesterday, and I think this one is it, and it's that cash buyers are disappearing. Well, that does suggest that some of the exact same people that are willing to engage in speculative investments, whether in the private or the public markets, are beginning to withdraw some capital. That's a very important factor. That's something that we need to pay particular attention to, because it is that source of liquidity that has been able to really inflate the private assets. It's also been one of the clearest signs of speculative interest. Now, the big question is whether we're going to see that feeding through into the high yield sector. And so far, there isn't a great deal of evidence for that. The high yield spreads are still reasonably well contained. But this is obviously something that we do need to pay particular attention to. If there is evidence of highly speculative ventures starting to roll over and an unwillingness of investors to continue to support them, that's representative of declining risk appetite. Against that background, we continue to see that the subscription business model type companies continue to garner interest. And Microsoft was pretty much unchanged in here today. Visa is another company that has been doing rather, I think, spectacularly well since the beginning of this year. And that these are examples of accelerating trends. So,
Sorry, me. I can't do that.
when I don't know why Siri just turned itself on, but when we look at Visa, it has held this sequence of higher reaction lows since December of last year. I think when we look at these clear winners and losers, one thing that we certainly get towards the end of a cycle is a narrowing of breadth, and that does appear to be what's happening. The underperformance of the FANG index and its weightings and the relative importance it is attaching to the kinds of companies that were doing particularly well in 2017 rather than those that are doing well now. Well, this suggests that this isn't a particularly good barometer for what we can anticipate from markets in future. In fact, I haven't seen an ETF that is 100% dedicated to the subscription business model yet, and that would suggest that that is probably still in the future. Of course, when we get accelerating trends, that's when we need to pay particular attention to the consistency of those trends. Now, when we think about the bond markets, well, Treasury yields were a little bit firmer in here today and steadying around the 2% level. Mario Draghi, despite the fact that the ECB statement was relatively sanguine, he was saying that economic activity is getting worse and worse, manufacturing activity is getting worse and worse. He's calling, and he has been calling, he said himself, since 2014, for fiscal stimulus. The problem is that there's very little likelihood of that in fact occurring. That the creditor nations, Germany in particular, are terrified of moral hazard, particularly from the debtor nations. So they're very reluctant to really do anything on the fiscal front. They're much happier for the ECB to do all the work, and that suggests that we are going to see lower interest rates and we're going to see additional quantitative easing. When I turned on the screens this morning, the euro was in the process of posting an upside Q reversal, but it gave up the entire advance by the close. And this continues to look like a reasonably consistent downtrend. So I think it is quite likely that over the course of the next month, we're probably going to see the euro taking out the 110 area. So then when we think about what's going on, for example, in Australia, it's a very similar set of circumstances. The central bank is about to cut rates even further. They are also engaged in fiscal stimulus, and in this, that is where the big difference is. Australia is willing to both do quantitative and fiscal, or I guess monetary and fiscal stimulus. There is the real potential that Australia is going to engage in quantitative easing, or potentially that yields are going to go negative, considering the downtrend that we've already seen in the 10-year Treasury for Australian bonds. There is the real potential that shorter dated bonds are going to go negative rather soon. And the other, I think, rather important point is that when we think about the yield curve in Australia, there's a significant belly. And when we think about the commonality that we have in terms of the shape of the yield curves in so many of the world's markets, rather than thinking about the case for whether there's an inversion between the 3 month and the 5 year, or the 1 year and the 5 year, or the 1 year and the 6 year, I think it's more beneficial to think about it that this is clearly pricing in the potential that we are going to have significant interest rate cuts between now and next year, or indeed the middle of next year. And that is likely to put downward pressure on currencies. It's going to put downward pressure on yields. But then there is the additional point that it's rather beneficial for stock prices. And the ASX 200 moved to a new closing high in here today. So this has been an incredibly impressive advance, and it isn't over. There is still a sequence of higher reaction lows, and a sustained move below 6600 would be required to really signal that we're getting a process of mean reversion. As long as the Australian dollar is trending downwards and yields are trending downwards, and the government is more interested in trying to support the property market than worrying about anything else, then the nominal price of stocks is likely to continue to rise. This is also one of the more important points behind why gold has been rather firm. Now, this continues to look like a consolidation, and as long as gold is continuing to hold the $1,350 area on a reasonably sustained basis, you can also see clearly that the 200-day moving average is rather catching up, because just by virtue of the fact that the price has gone up so quickly. This looks like a base formation completion, and that's a very meaningful change. It represents the clear conclusion that investors have reached that we're in an era of competitive currency devaluation, and that that competition is keeping the majority of the major currencies reasonably steady relative to one another, because they're all engaged in it. But that does not stop the effects from being manifested in the rise in equity prices and the rise in commodity prices, or most particularly gold prices. And the other big point is that the ETF holdings of gold are starting to respond, and this has been a meaningful breakout. And then when we think about the total known holdings of silver, then we have a reasonably similar story. What the difference between these two charts tells us is quite simple. It takes a lot less money to move silver than it does gold, and this has been a very meaningful breakout in terms of demand for silver from ETFs. So silver prices continue to be reasonably steady, but it has rallied spectacularly over the course of the last 2 weeks. I think there is a clear likelihood that we're going to get some consolidation, and that is going to offer, I think, the next favorable entry opportunity. I think the most important adage that we developed during the last bull market was don't pay up for commodities. And we've seen ample examples, or I guess we've got lots of experience in seeing that breakouts don't generally tend to be sustained. And they do pull back, and you do get better buying opportunities. The most important thing to monitor on the precious metals is a sequence of higher reaction lows. It's when you get, those generally offer the best buying opportunities. So it's having the fortitude to buy on weakness is generally rewarded with these kinds of markets, which makes it emotionally difficult to engage with. And I think that probably has more to do with position sizing than anything else. And oil prices have been really quiet, and this continues to look like a supply-dominated environment. That's despite the fact that we've had an uptick in geopolitical tensions. What I also found interesting in here today is Reliance Industries, which has been the clear outperformer among the large caps in India, has pulled back now to the region of the trend mean. We can also see that over the course of the last 3 years, it has bounced on successive occasions from here. So if it's going to bounce, then this is about where that needs to happen. And if it fails, well, considering the weighting that it has in the Indian index, then that could contribute to some additional weakness. And the Nifty index is almost right in the region of the trend mean right now. When we think about what is going on in China, well, they are running a massive fiscal stimulus, but so far they have been the size of their infrastructure or their infrastructure stimulus or their willingness to lend to the traditional arms of liquidity provision has been relatively paltry. They are, however, supporting the 3,000 level on the A-share index. When we then think about what's going on in terms of the renminbi, well, it has been quite steady and almost inert for the last 2 weeks. That's, I think, a clear intention to hold the region of the 6.8 to 6.9 level without having very much more volatility. I think, though, when we look at the longer-term chart, it's more likely than not that the next big move is going to be north of 7. And China is probably going to have to devalue their currency because of the slowdown in the domestic economy. And against that slowdown, there is the very real potential that there are going to be army boots on the ground in Hong Kong in the not-so-distant future. The protesters defacing the official Chinese seal was probably a mistake, and there is a real potential now that the army is going to be called in to quell the street protests. There is just no way that China is going to tolerate an independence movement in Hong Kong, and unfortunately that does raise the risk potential here that the efforts to put it down could be more heavy-handed than anyone might wish. And I think that is a potential risk here, that this is something that we need to pay attention to. It could have an effect on market sentiment globally, most particularly if that derails the negotiations which are just getting started about a trade deal. So it's not as if everything has that everything is coming up roses. There are things that could potentially derail the advance here. Well, I guess something that everyone has been worried about for the last 3 years has been Brexit. And the pound today gave up some of its advance from yesterday. It has, however, broken that sequence of lower rally highs, and it's confirming support around the 110 area. Boris Johnson has stuffed his parliament, or his cabinet, with pro-Brexit people. So that is trying to create a credible argument that they are willing to leave the EU without a deal. So far, however, the EU has not budged. And if everyone continues to play hardball, well, that does increase the potential that the UK could indeed leave. of course, it also increases the potential that the Conservatives could lose their majority in Parliament, and that we could be moving towards an election. So I think there is a lot to play for in terms of the outlook for Brexit. But when we think about the stock market, well, the FTSE 250 is coming right back up to test the 20,000 level. The Russell 2000 is coming up to test the 1600 point level. The MDAX is also coming up to test the upper side of its range. And we can see that there is a lot of commonality here in mid-caps. Well, mid-caps are generally more levered to the domestic economy, and they will be more responsive to fiscal stimulus. The change in the USA, where we now have an additional fiscal stimulus, as well as the potential for interest rate cuts and additional quantitative easing, does suggest that the liquidity tide has turned. The commonality in actions by central banks globally, with not just developed markets but also emerging markets willing to cut interest rates, and the competitive devaluation of currencies, that all points towards additional rounds of liquidity lining up to hit these markets. So we are potentially going to get some short-term consolidation. It's also worth considering that we're in the middle of July, and this is not generally the most seasonally attractive time for markets. In fact, it's quite normal that we get a little swoon in July and early August before things start to pick up again as people come back to work at the end of August. So I think it is likely we're going to get some consolidation. I think the potential for very significant monetary and fiscal stimulus to hit the markets in September is really quite compelling. And then, of course, we're in the second half of the third year of the US presidential cycle, which is generally a rather bullish period overall. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.